Here we go. All right, we're on the Rosh Hashanah, Daf Chaf Vav. We started the new parak last week with the Mishnah on the Chaf Hei Amud Beis, but now is when we really started the parak, because the first Mishnah of the parak was kind of a holdover from the last parak in terms of the topic. We were still talking about Kiddush HaChodesh. Now we are getting into the topic of the third parak, which is Shofar. So let's start with the Mishnah on Chaf Vav Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, and we're talking now about what you can use for a shofar, which animal's horns, or which animal's shofar. The Mishnah says, Ko ha-shofros k'sherim chutz mishalpara. Any animal, Rashi points out, any animal meaning a ram or an ibex or whatever it is, any animal's horns can be used for tkiyas shofar, chutz mishalpara, except for a cow, mipneshu keren. Except for a cow, because a cow, if you look in the very, we'll see the various references in Psukim to cows, it never refers, or we'll see, but the Tanna Kamma is positing it now, is that it never refers to that that horn as a shofar. It refers to it as a keren. And we know you're supposed to blow a shofar, not a keren. And so therefore a cow is out of the picture, but other animals' horns can be used for this mitzvah, according to the Tanna Kamma. Amar Rav Yossi, Valo koa shofros nikru keren. That's not true that cow is the only one that's referred to as keren, because the horns of all animals are, or even other animals other than cows are used, that are referred to as keren. Shenemar bimshoch bekeren hayovel. There's a pasuk in Yoshua which says bimshoch, when you bimshoch bekeren hayovel. Yovel, as we'll see later in the Gemara, refers to a ram, and so here it's referring to a ram's horn as a keren. So Rav Yossi doesn't really understand what the problem is that the Tanna Kamma has with using a cow's horn. And so Rav Yossi presumably says anyone, any animal's horn can be used for the mitzvah of shofar. It's interesting, the implication of this Mishnah is that there's no restriction other than this, and that you could even use a non-kosher animal, which is generally not consistent with the way we view things. Usually to do mitzvahs, we say you can only use tefillin and, you know, sefer Torah. You can only use kosher animals, stuff to perform mitzvahs with. So the Ran later on mentions that he thinks that perhaps a non-kosher animal is not, he doesn't say definitively, but he says he thinks probably a not-kosher animal's horn is not acceptable for a shofar. And if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, the Rama says you should be machmir for this Ran, so you shouldn't use a non-kosher animal, non-kosher animal's horn. But the question is, what if you have only that? If you're stuck in a place where you only have animals, but some non-kosher animal, a horse horn, or horses don't have horns, a unicorn's horn.
Quick question.
Yeah.
When you're talking about non-kosher, okay, are we talking about an animal that wasn't shechted kosher?
No. So the Mishnah of Berurah.
Or are we talking about?
The Mishnah of Berurah there points out that it doesn't have to be shechted species. That shofar is perfectly kosher. We're talking about where the species is not kosher. Mm-hmm. So there the Ran is suggests that you should be machmir. The Rama says you should be machmir, and where machmir is certainly l'chatchila. If it's the only shofar you have, I think the Mishnah Berurah there says you should blow it but not make a bracha on it.
But in the Beis Hamikdash, they had to use some things from non-kosher animals.
For the shofar?
No.
Oh, for other things.
But like the curtains, or seal skins
and
snails.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay, so there's some precedent for using non-kosher animals. But at least here the Ran says you should be machmer. But that's just the Ran. The Mishnah doesn't reference that. Meaning it's from this Mishnah, it seems very clear. Kol ha-shofar is k'sherim. This would be the place to mention that any limitation. Okay, so the Gemara now says, Shapir ka'amar Rav Yossi. The Gemara says Rav Yossi had a really good point here, because he quoted a pasuk and he says, in fact, we do see the word keren being used in the context of animals other than cows. V'rabbanan, so how are the Rabbanan going to answer this? Ko ha-shofros ikru shofar vi'ikru keren. So the Rabbanan clarify the Tanna Kamma's position. The Tanna Kamma now clarifies, we're clarifying the Tanna Kamma's position and saying that all other animals, other than the cow, sometimes it does refer to them as shofar, and sometimes it refers to its horn as a keren. Depara, but when it comes to a cow, keren ikre, shofar lo ikre. Para is exclusively referred to as a keren, and the word shofar never appears by a cow. Dechsiv bechor shoro hadarlo v'karnei ra'im karnav. There you see specifically a cow, a shor, is referring to as a karen. V'Rav Yossi, so what's Rav Yossi going to say? So Rav Yossi, amrocha de para nami ikri shofar. He says, no, it's not true. A para also is referred to as a shofar. Dechsiv v'teitiv Hashem mishor par. The Pasuk in Tehillim says that it's better for Hashem, I think it's talking about tefillah, tefillah is better for Hashem than a shor par. The Gemara then says, im shor lama par, vim par lama shor. Why does the Pasuk seem repetitive? Why is it saying both a shor and a par? Elamai shor par, mi shofar. So they kind of amalgamate the two words together, and it's saying, vatita Hashem mi shofar. That's what that's how Rav Yossi understands that pasuk. V'Rabbanan, none of the Rabbanan understand that pasuk. K'd Rav Masna, d'am Rav Masna, my shor par shu gadol kapar. So they explain the repetitiveness of shor and par. Not to say that it's referring to a shofar here in the context of a par, but rather to say that it's saying, the pasuk is saying that it's a tefillah is greater for Hashem than even a shor that's the size of a par, meaning a shor is a very young cow, and a par is only after it's like 3 years old, and so it's referring to a shor that's very big like a par. Good. Ula Amar, now Ula gets into the fray, and he says, Ula Amar, hainu taima d'rabbanan k'drav chista. The real reason for the Rabbanan, for why they say that every shofar is kosher except for a par, is like Rav Chista. D'am Rav Chista, mipnei ma ein kohen gadol nichnas bebigdei zav, lifnai v'lifnim, la'avod avoda. Why is it that the kohen gadol on Yom Kippur, when he does the avoda in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he doesn't wear his big day zav? If you remember, they switches from the big day zav to lavan back and forth. And every time he does the avoda inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he's wearing the big day lavan. Why is it that we don't, the Torah tells him not to wear the big day zav inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Wafish ein kategar nasa saneger, a famous line, that the prosecutor shouldn't be used as the defenseman. Meaning we're going to ask Hashem for kapara on Yom Kippur, so we're not going to do it by wearing begadim that remind Hashem of the Chet HaEgel, which was made out of gold, and so we don't want the prosecutor to become the defenseman. So that's what Rav Chista says is the reason why you can't use a par, but why you're not going to use the horn of a par as your shofar on Rosh Hashanah, because the par again is going to elicit thoughts and remind the Ribono Shel Olam of the Chet HaEgel. That's not what we want to conjure up on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur or Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara then questions that and says, "Velo, is it true that we're so careful of never using anything reminiscent of a par of the Egel Azav? Va'ika dam par. One of the karbanos is, or some of the karbanos are made out of a par, and we use the dam of the par." So the Gemara answers, "Hov ishtani ishtani." No, it's one thing for something like the shofar, which is still looks like a piece of the par, or the gold, which reminds Hashem specifically of the Chet HaEgel. But dam looks like dam, meaning dam's interchangeable. Dam of a par looks like dam of a goat. And so bringing the dam as part of the avoda is not going to conjure up the idea of a paraduma, of the Chet HaEgel, and therefore that's not a problem. Aiva ikag aron v'chapores ukrov. You have other things made out of gold in the Beis HaMikdash, and shouldn't that run afoul of Ein Kategor Nasa Senegar Licheya Egel? The answer is Chote Bal Yakriv Kamrinan. No, the only thing that causes the problem is to bring something as a carbon, but for it just to be used as accoutrements in the Beis HaMikdash, that doesn't have a problem of Ein Kategor Nasa Senegar. It's just that we don't want to do an actual action and activity with something that reminds us of the part.
What about the term? Isn't there a mission that says in Bikram that the rich people used to line the baskets with gold?
So this would be the same thing. That's not part of the avoda. That's just an accoutrement to, you know, that's just a basket. That's not actually part of the avoda.
Well,
that's not like...
What do they do with the basket? What do they do with the basket? Was it restringent or they used it?
I don't know. It wasn't...
They gave it to the Kohen.
Yeah, they may have given it to the Kohen, but it wasn't actually part and parcel of the Bikurim. Okay, the Gemara then says, okay, if we're talking about an actual avoda, we'll get a little closer. Va'ika kafu machta. We have actual utensils, the spoon and the shovel that's used for the ketores, things that are actually used in as part of the avoda, and those are made out of gold. The Gemara says, chote ba yisnoa kamrinan. No, the only problem of inkategor nasasinegor is when you are using it to be misnoa, to kind of decorate yourself, to where the big day zav would be a problem, but not to actually use something as part of the avoda. It's just that if this is the way you're going to adorn yourself, to make yourself look presentable for the avoda, that's a problem of conjuring up the images of the cheda ego. Ava'ika big day zav mi bachutz. It's true that we don't allow him to wear, that the Torah says he should not wear the big day zav inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the other parts of the avoda he's wearing the big day zav for. The Gemara answer is mi bifnim kamrina. No, the only problem with chotis in kategor nasa sinegar is really we're focused on the inside, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the real place where Hashem resides, where the Shechina is. The Gemara then says, if that's the case, and it's only a problem of bifnim, within the Kodesh HaKadoshim, shofar nami mi bachutzu. So then shofar shouldn't be a problem altogether because shofar is not done in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Shofar is blown outside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So why can't you make a shofar out of, or use the shofar of a par that would remind you of the cheda egel? Gemara answer is kevan duzikaron hu kibifnin dami. So the Gemara answer is that the shofar is blown as a zichron shrua. It's to kind of call Hashem's attention to our prayers. It's part of tefillah itself, and that's serious business. It's not just like a utensil, and it's not just like the clothes that are worn by the Kohen Gadol outside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Shofar is the real deal. It's calling Hashem's attention to our tefillos, and that's why even if it's not bifnim, even if it's bachutz, we're going to have a problem of in kategor and asasinigor. We want to stay far away of any reminiscence of the cheda ego.
Would par adum be considered like the korban?
I'm sorry?
Would par adum be considered like a regular korban?
So that's a question. Paraduma is a good question. I wrote a note here. Chazal say that paraduma is actually as a kapara for the cheda egel, right? Paraduma is kind of as a
mother should come and take care of the sin of the child.
Right, exactly. So the Aruch HaNer, I saw quoted, the Aruch HaNer says that something that's specifically done as a kapara for the cheda eagle, there's no way you could get around kind of reminding Hashem of the cheda eagle. So if it's being done directly as a kapara, as penance for the cheda eagle, so that's a different story. Then we're going to not have a problem with inkategor nasasing or paraduma. But it's only when we're not directly focused on the cheda eagle with these other avodas and shofar and stuff like that, that's when we worry about inkategor nasasing.
Wasn't the eagle though given? Wasn't the paraduma becoming tahar given before the cheda
eagle?
Meaning it didn't happen yet.
Yes, because you're dealing here with the Pesach Sheni, right? Pesach Sheni happen before the Chet?
Right, that's why.
Well, it's in the Torah. I don't.
Because even though it's afterwards, though, but it's before because it was chronologically.
Yeah, it was rolled out. I don't remember the specific. There are Gemaras that discuss this kind of. Yeah, I don't know the exact. Okay, fine. Where are we? Okay, so that was the Rabbanon. Now the Gemara asks. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? What do you mean that this restriction on using the shofar of a par is based on in kategor nasa sanegar? Our Mishnah said that it's because of the whole keren. Because par is the only one that's called keren exclusively, right? So the Gemara says, v'hatan mipneshu keren kamar. Our Tanakhama said it's because of keren. So what are you bringing up with Rav Chista and in kategor nasa sanegar? The Gemara answer is chada v'od kamar. It's telling you this and that. Chada de inka teger nasa seneger. One reason is because inka teger nasa seneger. We don't want to remind Hashem of the chida ego. The ode mipneshu keren, and an additional reason is because it is referred exclusively as keren as opposed to other shofars. So now that we have this additional reason of inka teger nasa seneger, so now we're going to ask on Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi, you allowed the shofar of a par. For Rav Yossi, how are you going to answer in kategor nasa senegar? For Rav Yossi, Amrocha, he's going to say, Dika Amra saying kategor nasa senegar, Hani nili mi bifnim. So he's going to seize on one of the challenges we raised above. He says, that's only when you're talking about Avoda in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Vahai shofar mi bachutsu. And this shofar, it takes place outside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and that's why that's not a problem. Udika Amris bifneshu karen, and that which you said, which is, right, this is, again, getting back into the dialogue in the Mishnah, and that which you said, Tanakama, that it's because of the par is referred to as Karen, Kol HaShofar's Namri Ikru Karen. So then Rav Yossi has his answer of Kol HaShofar's Namri Ikru Karen, and then we went through the Gemara above, explaining how the Rabbanan deal with that challenge. Okay. Abaye says, Hainu Tamayu Drabanan, Shofar Amar Achmana, Voshnayim Vishlosha Shofros. The reason why the reason why the Tanakama disallowed the shofar of the horn of a par is because the Pasuk says, the Torah says shofar in the singular. You only blow on one shofar, not two shofros, not three shofros. The Hadapara, Kevin de Kai Gildi Gildi, Mischaze Kishnayim Vishlosha Shofros. But the way that the horn of a par grows, it kind of grows sort of like a tree grows, where you see the rings of a tree. The tree, every year the tree adds on more. So here too, the shofar, in its various stages of development, it looks as, you could kind of see ridges in the par's shofar, so it looks like it developed in several stages. And it looks like, perhaps, say the Rabbanan, according to Abaye, that it's running afoul of the singular shofar. You can only blow one shofar, and the shofar of a par looks like a few shofros because of these ridges that develop in its various stages of growth. The Gemara says, Va'atan mipneshu karen kamar. So the same challenges we brought to Rav Chista, right? The Tanakama said that the reason why we use only the shofar, we're not allowed to use the shofar of a par, is because it says karen. The answer is chada va'od kamar. It's giving one reason and then another. Chada de shofar echad amar achmana v'oshayim v'shlosha shofros. One reason is because the Torah insisted on one shofar and not many shofros, and a par would be a problem with that. V'od mipnei shu karen. An additional reason is because of the karen reason, because the par is referred to as karen, not as shofar. Rav Yossi, and has Rav Yossi respond, amrucha de ka'amre shofar echad amar achmana v'oshayim v'shlosha shofros. When our rule that it has to be one shofar and not a multiplicity of shofars, not two or three shofros, kevan de mechabri adadi chadhu. In this case, it's not really considered, it's not really two or three shofros, it's just that it's one shofar, it's just that it grows in that certain way. It's mechabri adadi, it's all glued together, it's all one shofar. And so therefore it's considered one shofar, it's not considered two or three shofars. Udika Amris, and that which you said, Mipneshu Karen, again, Kol HaShofar's Nami Ikru Karen, says Rav Yossi, that's true not just of par, but of the other shofars as well. Okay, now the Gemara says, if you remember, Rav Yossi in his challenge to the Rabbanan said, all the shofros are called Karen, and then he brings a pasuk from Yeshua that says, Bimshoch Bekeren Hayovel, and we explained above that Yovel means a ram, right? So the Gemara now says, Ma Yuvla Lishna de Dichrahu. How do we know that Yovel in that pasuk refers to a ram? Dichra is a ram. The Tanya, because we have a brayso that says, Am Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, Kishalachti or Aravia, when I went to Arabia, Hayukorim Ledichra Yovla. That's where I learned. I saw that in the languages they spoke, they referred to a ram as a yovla. And now this is going to kind of kick off a whole bunch of etymological discussions. How do we know all sorts of words from different places? We'll see. V'am Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva said further, "Where kishalachti l'Galia, when I went to Galia, hayukorin l'nida galmuda." They would refer to a nida, a woman who has the halachic status of a nida, as a galmuda. My galmuda. What does galmuda mean? Gemuga. Gemula da mibayla, someone who is separated from her husband. And if you look in the Shilos or Tshuvas that talk about agunas, whenever you have a Shilos or Tshuva about aguna, kind of the poetic language that's used at the beginning of the Shilos to describe the plight of a woman, it says this woman is Haisha aguna v'galmuda. It's kind of one of the flowery words that the poskim used to refer to as an aguna. So this is the source for it. This is how we know it. Galmuda is a Gemula dami bayla, a woman who's separated from her husband. Fine. Vam Rabbi Akiva, continuing in the same theme, kishalachti l'Afriki, when I went to, I guess that's Africa, hayukorin l'ma'a kashita. They called a ma'a, which is a coin, a denomination, a certain kind of coin, they called it a kashita. Now the Gemara asks, l'may nafkamina, why do we care what they called that coin in Africa? With Firusha Ma'ak Shita Daraisa Mea Danki. It's in order to understand that Pasuk, which is the Pasuk when Yaakov bought the field near Shechem from the Bnei Chamor, and it talks about how much he paid for it. So now we know how to interpret what Kshita is. Kshita is a Ma'a.
Kasita,
thank you. Kasita is a Ma'a. Okay. I'm a Rebbe. Rebbe says, "Kishalachti l'krachei ayam." When I went to the villages on the sea, excuse me, hayukorin l'mechira kira. They would refer to a sale as a kira. L'may nafkamina. What is this important for? L'firushei achsher karisi li. That which I now we know it means that which I bought. This is referring to. I think this is in this week's parsha, right? This is the burial plot that Yaakov Avinu bought. He says, "I want to be buried in the burial plot that I bought." I share karisi li. It refers to mechira. We wouldn't have known that had that not been for Rebbe's travels to the Krachayam, where he saw where he heard people referring to kricha as akira as mechira. Am Rav Shimon Lakish, kishalachti utchum kan nishraya. When I went to the area of kan nishraya. Hayukorin l'kala ninfi, they would refer to a kala, a bride, as ninfi. U'tarnigol sechvi, and they would refer to a tarnigol sechvi. L'kala ninfi maikra, where do we see that played out in a pasuk? Yefei nof misos kol haaretz, right? It's referring to the beauty of the beauty of the sea, of the shore. And that's coming off the kala, right? Just like a kala is beautiful, so too is if they know for those cards. Utarni goes. Oh, sorry, that's one pasuk, right? Utarni goes sechvi. No,
that's the next thing.
That's the next thing. If they know for those period. Good. Utarni. Where do we see Utarni goes sechvi? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Vibay Seima, Rabbi Shua ben Lakish, Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Maikra Mi Shas Bituchos Chachma, Omina Sanga Sechvi Vina. Right, the pasuk in Iyov says, "Who put betuchos chachma? Who put chachma in the inner parts of a person? Omina sanga sechvi vino? Who gave the sechvi a tarnigol insight? Mishas betuchos chachma? Who put?" It's referring to Hashem. Who put wisdom in the inner parts? Elu klayos. This refers to the kidneys. Where Chazal understood the kidney to be a source of wisdom, Amina sanga sechvi vina, who put insight in the sechvi zet tarnigol. It's referring to the tarnigol. Levi ikla lahu asra. So now we're going to tell a story about Levi. Levi ikla lahu asra. Levi went on a trip. He went to a certain place. Asa gavro kamein. A person came to him. Amar lei. And he said to him, Kavan Planya. This person said to Levi, Kavan Planya. Planya is pony, like, you know, John Doe. John Doe was Kavan. He didn't know what that meant. Lo hava yada, my kamerle. And Levi had no idea what this guy was trying to say with the words Kavan Planya. So Asa Shal Be Midrasha. So Levi came back and he asked in the Beis Medrash, what does this word mean, Kavan? Amrue, and they said to him, Gazlan. They said to him, Kavan means a Gazlan, a thief. Amrulei Gazlan Amrucha. When that person said Kavan, he was saying to you Gazlan. Dechsev Hayikava Adam Elokim. The pasuk in Malachi says Hayikava Adam Elokim. There he refers to as Gezel, as thievery. Amrulei Rava Mi Barnish or Ravashi. So Rava from Barnish said to Ravashi, Yavai Hasam. If I would have been there, instead of just shrugging my shoulders like Levi and coming back to the Beis Medrash and asking the people what this means, I would have tried to figure it out myself. Havaminolei, I would have said to the guy who said Kavan Panya, Heichi Kavach, B'mai Kavach, V'mai Kavach. I would have asked all these questions, like how was he Kavach? And with what was he Kavach? And why was he Kavach? I would have kind of asked him questions to elicit more discussion about it so I could have ascertained the meaning of what he was saying. And based on his answers, I could have kind of intuited or derived what he meant to say. What was Kavan? What did Kavan mean? So the question is, why didn't Levi do that? Why didn't Levi ask some follow-up questions to try to ascertain what Kavan means? The Gemara says, V'ihu Savar, and Levi thought, Milsa di Isura Kamrale. Levi thought that this guy was saying something that wasn't so tznius, or was saying something having to do with Arias. So he didn't want to ask more questions. He kind of slinked away, went to the Beis Medrash just to kind of understand what the word meant. But he wasn't about to get into an inappropriate conversation with this strange guy who was using strange words that he didn't know. Okay. Now the Gemara says, Lohavu yadi rabbanan mai serugin. The rabbanan didn't know what the word serugin means. Now this is important because it comes up, as Rashi points out, in Megillah, in a halachic context, where it says, kara serugin. If you read the Megillah, serugin, which means out of order. So they need to know what the word serugin means. So shamua lamsa debe rebi. So they heard, they overheard a maidservant in the house of Rebbe, Dechazas Nahu Rabbanan, where she was seeing the rabbis, Davu Aile Paski Paski. They were going in and out at they weren't coming in all together, they were coming in and out in bunches. Amru Lahu, and she said, An Masai Atem Nichnasim Serugim Serugim. She said, how long are you rabbis are going to go in and out of the house in bunches, like kind of out of order, not in an orderly way altogether. And so they were able to see, based on her usage of the word, what Serugin means. Lohavayadi Rabbanan mai chalugugos. They didn't know what the word chalugugos means. They didn't know what this word means. Yumachad shamu la'amsa debe Rebbe. They heard that same maidservant, the maidservant in the house of Rebbe, the chazes la'ugavra de kamivader parchine. So they overheard the maidservant of Rebbe who saw a certain person who was scattering parchine, which Rashi explains is a certain kind of vegetable. So Amrulei, and she said to him, Ad masaya tamifazer chalugolkecha. How long are you going to spread or scatter your chalugos? And then they figured out that word must refer to this vegetable that she was watching him. Now, the point of all this is that
they didn't have chastro,
and the way to figure out what words mean is to see how they're actually used in real life. You know, people who write dictionaries, they kind of have to read the literature, they have to see people and the way the words are actually being used, and that's how you figure out how words mean. Next, we'll have Yadi Rabbanan Mai Salsala Utromecha. They didn't know what that word in Mishlei meant, Salsala meant. They didn't know what that meant. The Pasuk is referring to, Rashi points, the idea is that you should go and find and overturn and kind of study and focus on the hidden aspects of Torah, all sorts of hidden gems in Torah, and that will raise you up. But they didn't know what that word means, salsala. Yom achad shamu la'amsa debe Rebbe. they again overheard the maidservant in the house of Rebbe. She, I guess she had a very good vocabulary. Davis Amra lo Gavra. She was saying to a certain person, Dava kamahapich bisareha. She saw, or she was talking to a guy who was playing with his hair. He was kind of turning his hair around and twirling his hair around. Amrulay, and she said to him, Admasayata misalsa bisareich. How long are you going to overturn or turn over your hair? And so they were able to figure out that the pasuk means that you should turn over Torah learning. You should look for the gems in Torah. You should turn over things until you find something that are doing so will elevate you. Next, we'll have a Yadi Rabbanan Mai Vata'atase B'matase Hashmeid. They didn't know what this pasuk in Yeshaya meant. So they didn't know what the pasuk meant. It was had something to do with destruction, right? Hashmeid is destruction. So Yumachad, one day Shemul Amsid Be Rebbe, they overheard her, Davis Amru Chaverta, she said to her friend, Shkuli Ta'atisa Vatate Besa. She said, grab the broom and sweep the house. So then they knew that Ta'atisa is a broom, and then they were able to understand the pasuk, which is to say, sweep it with a broom of destruction. Next, Laviyadi Rabbanan Mai Hashleicha Hashem Yahivcha V'Uyichal Kolecha. They didn't know what the word that you should put to Hashem or send to Hashem Yahavcha V'Uyichal Kolecha, and He'll sustain you. Amar Rabba Bar Avchana Yumachad Hava Hazlina Bahadayahu Taya. Once I was with a certain Arab guy, Hava Darina Tuna, and he was. What is it? Avidarina Tuna. He was holding a load, Rashi says. He was holding a load. V'amrali, and he said to me, Shko Yahivech V'shade Agamalai. And he said, take my Yahivcha, my load, and put it on my camel. So now they knew that it refers to a load, and the Pasuk in Tehillim is saying, put your load on Hashem, U'ichal Klecha, and he will sustain you.
So it's interesting. So if they didn't understand these words, that means that they couldn't learn out halachas from these words, correct?
I guess most of these are drushas of psukim, which is kind of less of an emergency. In their time, they figured out what these psukim mean. Obviously, they once knew what these words meant. They were written, and they were passed generation to generation. It's just that these particular rabbis didn't, had trouble understanding what a particular word meant, and so they had to go out and kind of see how the word was being used. It was, I think, only one of them really refers to a halacha of Serugin. My guess is they kind of knew what the halacha was because, it's in the context of the Mishnayos and the Gemara. They had a Torah Shebaal Peh that they had transmitted from generation to generation. They knew these halachas. They were allowed to read the Megillah. Or not read the halachas referring to Megillah being read out of order. But they probably just had a problem with the particular word. Like, they understood the halachic concepts, they just didn't know what that particular word, Serugin, meant. And so they had to figure it out based on usage.
Are those Hebrew words, or are those Persian or Greek?
They don't sound so Hebrew.
Right.
It sounds more Aramaic, right? Because a lot of them end with Aleph. Some of them are Hebrew. Yahavcha in Tehillim, I think, is Hebrew.
Palestinian Aramaic. Which is different, Eastern Aramaic, which is different from Western Aramaic.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, a lot of these words are kind of, I have all sorts of sources, and so, yeah. Okay, says the Mishnah, Shofar shel Rosh Hashanah shel Ya'al, Pashut. So the shofar used for Hashanah is from an ibex, a straight, you can picture a kind of an ibex horn. It's like this very straight stick. It kind of is like a cone, a straight cone. So it says the Tanakhama, the shofar Rosh Hashanah is a straight horn of an ibex. Upiv mitzupa, and it's referring now to the shofar and the chatzotzos, in a minute we'll see, that were used in the Beis Hamikdash. Upiv mitzupa zahav, and the mouthpiece, the mouth part of it, was actually coated in gold. Ushtei chatzotzos minat stadim. And there were two chatzotzos. People would blow chatzotzos on either side of the shofar. Shofar marich v'chatzotzos mekatzros. The sound of the shofar would sound longer, and the sound of the chatzotzos would sound shorter. So you'd have them all three together, and then the chatzotzros would end, and then you'd be left with the sound of the shofar continuing. And Rashi says this is because on Rosh Hashanah there's a mitzvah to your shofar. That's the ikar. And so that's why the sound of the shofar would have to continue even after the chatzotzros stopped, so you would hear the shofar exclusively. Shofar marav chatzotzros mekatzotzros. Why, as the Mishnah says, shemitzvah sayom b'shofar. Uvataniyos, and when they would blow these things on the taniyos, b'shel zacharim kfufim, so then the shofar was made out of a ram's horn, which is bent, as we know from our shofar. Upien mitzupa kesef, and that type of shofar in the Beis HaMikdash, its mouthpiece was covered in silver. Ushtei chatzotzros b'emtza, and there the chatzotzros would be in the middle, right? Two chatzotzros in the middle. Shofar mekatzer v'chatzotzros marichos. And in that instance, when it came to the taniyos, there was no mitzvah specifically of shofar, and the ikar was the chatzotzros. So therefore, the shofar would stop, and then the chatzotzros would continue on with their sound. Why she mitzvah sayom b'chatzotzros? Because the ikar then was the chatzotzros, and that's why that sound would continue. Shavel hayovel Rosh Hashanah. So they would blow the shofar on Yom Kippur of Yovel, right? And the Tanakhama at least holds that the shofar that was used for Yovel and Yom Kippur of Yovel was like the with Tekiyah Ulebrachos. So that they used the same shofar of Rosh Hashanah, which again was the straight shofar of an ibex, Ulebrachos, and also for the brachos. Rashi says that it's saying that they would say nine brachos of Yom Kippur of Yovel. They would, the Rishonim talk about this, they would say Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros, which we normally say on Rosh Hashanah only. For Yovel, they would actually say that on Yom Kippur as well. That's the Tanakhama. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and this is going to sound a little more familiar to us, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rosh Hashanah, Tokim, B'Shal, Zicharim. He says, on Rosh Hashanah, you use a ram's horn, which is bent. That's what we do. Ubiovlos, B'Shal, Ye'elim, on the Yovel, on the Yom Kippur of Yovel, then that's when you use a straight ibex horn. A straight ibex horn on. Rashi points out that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold the Gezerah Shavah, meaning the Chachamim above, the Rabban and the Tanakhama held that the what you blow on the Yovel of Rosh Hashanah is based on what's blown on. I'm sorry, the Yovel Yom Kippur is based on what's blown on Rosh Hashanah every normal year because of Gezerah Shavah. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold this Gezerah Shavah, so he's going to say that the Yovel of Yom Kippur is a different thing than Rosh Hashanah of a normal year. Now we'll get into how we paskin. The Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Levi, mitzvah shel Rosh Hashanah v'shel Yom HaKippurim b'kfufin v'shel kol Hashanah b'pshutim. So Rabbi Levi says that the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, as we know, is with the bent shofar of a ram, v'shel kol Hashanah, and the other times of the year when you would blow it on fast days, that's when you use a straight one of the ibex. The Gemara says, v'atinan, shofar shel Rosh Hashanah shel Yael pashut. Doesn't our Mishnah, our Tanakhama, hold that you use an ibex, a straight horn of an ibex in Rosh Hashanah? My answer is, Hu damar ki ay tana. He's basing it on the other Tana. D'tanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rosh Hashanah hayu tokim b'shel zacharim kfufin. On Rosh Hashanah, they would blow with a bent horn of a ram, uviyovlos b'shel ye'elim, and on Yovlos, and on Yom Kippur of Yovel year, that's when they would use the straight horn of an ibex. So, v'leim hilchasak Rabbi Yehuda. Where it says, why didn't Rabbi Levi just say the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda? Why did he have to go into repeat the halacha? Why didn't he just say halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah? Gemara answers, Iyamris halachasa k'Rabbi Yehuda. If he would have said simply halachas k'Rabbi Yehuda, havamina afi usho yovel nami k'Rabbi Yehuda. Then I would have thought that he's saying that on Yovel, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda also that you use an ibex. Nami k'Rabbi Yehuda sphere-like. K'mashmola, no. That we only paskin like Rabbi Yehuda with respect to the Rosh Hashanah blowing of a ram's horn, of a bent ram's horn, but when it comes to the blowing of a yovel, there we're going to go with the Gezerah Shavah and say that we've followed the practice of Rosh Hashanah and we blow with a ram's horn as well. Now the Gemara says, "B'mai kamufuge, what is the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah arguing about? What's the difference whether it's a straight horn or a bent horn, a ram's horn, an ibex horn? What's the machokas about?" So the Gemara answer is, Mar Savar Rosh Hashanah Kama Dekayif Inshe Daite Tfei Male. that on Rosh Hashanah we're engaged in tefillah and in davening, and therefore we're kind of bent over. Rashi says, but tefillos of panav kvushim la'aretz, that we're kind of looking downward. We're concentrating our tefillos and we're focused on that, and so therefore we're kind of bent over in a way, kind of looking downward. That's what's happening in Rosh Hashanah. Uviyom HaKippurim kamed pashit in ishtayte tfei mali. Whereas on Yom Kippur, it's better for us to kind of be looking straight ahead, not be bent over. Rashi says it's based on Pasuk Nisagu Vavenu al Kapayim. That's the difference between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Umar says that's one opinion. Umar says Rosh Hashanah kama de pashit in ishdaite tfei mali. And the other opinion is that on Rosh Hashanah, you kind of have to be looking straight ahead and having clear thoughts and be focused on in that way, not bent over, as opposed to Vataniyos kama de kaif in ishdaite tfei mali. And on the Taniyos, the theme is more that you're bent over, you're kind of davening in a more submissive way. And that's why on Taniyos it's bent over. As you know, the halacha we follow is like Rabbi Levi, who says that on Rosh Hashanah we use the ram's horn, which is bent over. And you know, a lot is spoken about this kind of theme, the idea of bent over and hunched over in a submissive way. And that's what the Rosh Hashanah, that's what the shofar of Rosh Hashanah is meant to represent. Okay.
Sure.
Was a kash, yeah. Name in a kash, almost like Omar Ratzah, Kadish Markle, Zakh, and Strel, Pihaf, Herbal.